Welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton, and along with me is our speedy Spartan skeptic. Because we're having skeptical stuff this today. So we got an episode where this could be a two episode or one episode. We don't know. This is gonna we're flying by the seat of our pants here. So let's just say we've pivoted from our initial plan and we're doing something different. But before that, I guess we'll go quickly through the weekend that was.
Yes. So you drove down to Ohio and you did your first Indian mud run. So how did it go? I saw some pictures. It sounded pretty brutal.
Yeah. So I didn't do the full course. I was just planning to do, I just did 3K as planned. And again, my knee was shot. So I really kind of did half the 3K and walked the second half. So anyway, but the course, yeah, it was deadly. You know, so they got the Chief Challenge thing, right? And there's where you do three laps. It's like a 10K course. And if you do three laps, you get the Chief Challenge. You get like this cool black arrow thing. And I think five people finished.
Like, how many would have attempted it?
No idea.
Oh, so you kind of make a decision as you do the laps.
I just know a lot of people that, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then did their first lap and they're going, no, I'm done. Fuck this. I'm out.
And this is a mandatory obstacle completion race.
Yeah. So yes and no. So for the first lap, for the first 10K, the competitive wave, it's mandatory completion. After that, if you want to continue on the Chief Challenge, it's just kind of, it's a challenge thing. You do what you do. I mean, 90% of the difficulty with Indian Mud Run is the terrain is just so brutal that, that even if you skip the obstacles, it wears you down anyway. But I would dare say most of the people who do the Chief Challenge still try the obstacles and stuff. But the main race itself is mandatory completion and the obstacles are good. Like there's a lot of them and they're a high quality. There's a lot of little piddly stuff too, but it all adds up. Like when I did the little finish line interview with Amy there, she said it well. Like it's like not one obstacle are you going to look at and go, well, that's deadly. That's going to kill me. It's just that, you know, death by a thousand cuts. Where they just all add up and get you, and they were good. But we had a blast volunteering, and so many cool people like doing great stuff and really pushing through. You get to see so many great stories and emotional responses to people completing obstacles they didn't think they would get done. And I'll be honest, I don't think it was your type of course.
No. Not really runnable.
No. It's a lot of really technical terrain. It's not fast. And generally, I think your courses, I think, are fast.
Yeah.
Even though I know you like some climbing and stuff like that. And it did have a lot of up and down hills, and there was definitely a vert in it. But it's not a fast course. It's a grinded out course.
Yeah.
But.
And then would you compare the obstacles to something like OCR or WC?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
if you wanted to get ready for OCR WC obstacles, that it would definitely be the place to go. Along the same level of difficulty, you know, some maybe a little bit harder. And they're creative, right? Like they had, so you know, the floating walls they always have at OCRWC, or not always, but most of the time have. They had that stretched out, but it wasn't just three of them. It was like six of them across a pond. And I'm using the term pond loosely because it was more like a swampy stank hole. So if you came off. Yeah, Slurm. Yes, that's right. Like Slurm from Futurama. If you came off, it was not a great spot to come off. And I was wearing my fancy race hat this weekend. My sun hat has protected me all weekend from getting sunstroke.
That matches your plaid shorts.
It does. You got to put on the plaid and race. Except I didn't race. I kind of did. I raced for a kilometer and a half. Yeah, there was really good. They have they had some great rigs. One that I was actually surprised with that it was more difficult than I thought was one called Tilted Kilt. And it was just sort of like a 45-degree ladder going up, and then it tilts down to another one going up, and then it tilts down to some rings going across them. It was tougher than I anticipated. I mean, I got through it, kept my band on the 3K, even though I couldn't run and was pretty ugly at the end because the knee was hurting very badly. I pretty much skipped across the line because,
Oh, man.
it wasn't good. Was not a dignified celebratory finish, that's for sure. But I still did well on the obstacles and stuff. I actually failed Gibbons.
Really?
Yeah, but and I'm gonna throw an asterisk in there. It was not my fault.
Why?
The funny part was I did Gibbons because that's where we volunteered. I probably did it 12 times through the day, never failed once. When I went to do it in the race, it was kind of a setup, and I'll be perfectly honest, I don't like this setup because it makes it too easy. But it was, where you could pretty much get to the third one, swing out, kick the bell, and you'd be done, right? So, I demonstrated that technique because that was the rules they had in place. My rules would have been you got to go through all of them, or at least you have to rack it in the last one and then hit the bell. But this is their rules. They didn't ask me. So I demonstrated that technique a bunch of times, chicken winging it, not chicken winging it, just whatever to help people get through. And then in my race, I get there and I grab the pegs and I go and I boom, one, two, put it in the third one, go grab the third one with my second hand in order to swing. As soon as I grab it, bump, falls right out of the saddle. And I look and it was a shorter peg. And so I'm like, damn it, threw that peg back in, grabbed another one and went across and off I went. I saw one guy break a peg. It was the first time I've seen that.
Oh.
He hung from it, just snapped right in half on him. So it was, but it was a good day, and definitely was something that hopefully gets picked up and hopefully carries on. And it's even sad to see the name go, even though that maybe that's the only thing that changes. But with Hubie hanging it up and questions about it being in the future, I am glad that I got to scratch it off my bucket list.
Yeah, we need these other races to survive.
Yeah, and it reminded me so much of Shale Hill, which was another one that was similar, where it went away way too soon. But okay, that said, it was a little brief, and we are planning to have an interview coming up, maybe in this episode, maybe in the next one, as we might have to split it up with the female winner, Amy Patchick, and just killer, awesome person, amazing obstacle. So hopefully you'll be hearing from her soon. But before that, there was a little controversy recently at the Mont Tremblant Spartan with the ultra race. And we have, I guess, one of the key people involved being as this gentleman received an hour and 20-minute penalty. So we'll get his story about it, and then we'll get Spartan's story about it, and we'll get Bethany Mind's opinion on it, which we're usually not short of. So here we go.
Hey,
Hey,
how's it
man.
going?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Awesome.
So just so you know, I got your name pronounced properly with only being told how to do it twice.
Oh yeah, what is it?
I don't know, Tyler, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right. So we already did a little introduction here. So we have Tyler Krasinski, which did I get it right? Is that right? See,
Good.
I got it right. So
Crush and ski.
crush and ski.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like de Ava.
So I my Instagram is the Crusher with a K, right? Crush and CN.
Exactly. It all
There you
fits.
go.
All fits.
It's all
So
fits.
we talked about it just a little bit before you started with us, got on here. So we had a little incident with the Ultra at Spartan, and why don't you just lay out exactly what happened and why you are a horrible person?
Well, I just on lap one of the Ultra Beast, where the intersection is where Ultras go left, Beasts go right. There was a volunteer that said, okay, just make sure second lap, Ultras go the Beast direction, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's what I remembered. And once I got to that point on lap two, I looked at my watch. It was almost 50K, almost 4,200 meters of elevation. So I thought, okay, she's right. Definitely go right, because the map said 4,200 meters and 50K. So that's when I was pretty confident I was going the right way. And I mean, hindsight, probably should have went the ultra route, I guess, just to be safe. But I, at the time, was pretty confident I was going the right way. And then once I crossed the finish line, I saw Austin. And he says, wow, where did you come from? And I said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I just crossed 10 minutes ago. And I knew something was off there, because I've always asked the volunteers on pretty much every obstacle, okay, how far is first place? How far is first place? And they kept saying, oh, he's way gone. He's like 40, 50 minutes away. So once I crossed the finish line, okay, there's something must be up. But then I went back to the watch. I thought, nah, I'm pretty confident I went the right way, because it matched up with the map, right? So that's basically it right there.
All right. So let me just fill in a few holes. So first off, so this was the Mount Tremblant Ultra. Yep. Now, Austin Azar came first, Tyler initially came second, and I sort of, at the moment, the guy who initially came third, his name is gapping me, and I will find it later.
Sylvain.
Okay.
Sylvain.
So in a general ultra, normally it's two laps plus an extra, what they call ultra loop. So this little bit extra. So normally on an ultra, you'd run one lap of the Beast, plus a little bit extra, and then another lap of the Beast. In this situation, the way they designed the course, you were going to have to run the ultra loop twice. So that is a little unusual. Mm-hmm. And then, So in your case, what happened was you only ran the ultra loop once. Like you said, a volunteer told you to just do it the one time. And you only ran it once. So you missed about a 4 kilometer section.
Yeah, 4 kilometers. And based on what Austin's results were, about 3 to 4 kilometers extra, about 300 meters extra of elevation, plus the three obstacles, which were not failable at all. They just get through them and you're done.
Yeah, they were like carries and stuff like that.
Yeah, and a barbed wire crawl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now the issue becomes for Spartan now when they find us, and I'm going to say this, that I've spoken to Spartan as well, and they told me that once you figured out that things weren't right, you self-reported, and this was after podiums and all that stuff, right? After everything's done, that you self-reported that you had missed a section of the course.
Yeah. Sylvain, the guy who initially came third, he reached out to me through Messenger, and he says, you went the wrong way on the second lap. Mm-hmm. It can't be. Maybe you guys went, because he told me the total of his GPS. He said he got 4,500 meters of elevation, 55 kilometers. I said, well, you must have gone the wrong way, because it doesn't match the map. And sure enough, he was right. I was wrong. And that's when I reached out to Spartan Canada on their Instagram page. I said, hey, I must have went the wrong way. What do you guys want to do? Just let me know. And so I came back the next day and we swapped trophies, second and third swapped.
Okay. So generally from this, and if you read the rule book, generally the course of action would be a straight out DQ. Yeah. Because if you break it down, what happened was you missed a part of the course. And again, unintentional. This is not a cheating scandal, nothing like that. Okay, just unintentionally missed a part of the course, which also included three what you would call mandatory obstacles that are listed in Spartan's list as mandatory obstacles.
Yeah.
Meaning if you don't complete them, that's a disqualification. So under normal circumstances, this would be considered a DQ. And Beth, if I was to just leave the story there, what would your thought be on that?
Well, yeah, from there, I would just say it should have just been a disqualification. There's been times when people have accidentally missed parts of the course and they've been, it happened to Jesse Bruce and Owl's Head and Ian St. Laurent, yeah, and they were disqualified. And say, and again, it was a complete, honest mistake, but the rules are the rules. You miss part of the course, it's just an automatic, it's just part of, it's just the way it's written.
Yeah, no, I was actually there. I was at, yeah, Owl's Head when that happened. So yeah, I know it's a different ownership group because it was not a part of the U.S. Spartan.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And then the other part of the course, it's also the three mandatory completion obstacles. So we've seen this before where they tried to DQ Mick for not fully completing a mandatory obstacle. And so again, there's two parts to it, the course and then the mandatory completion of obstacles. So,
right.
So now I'm going to read to you Spartan's official stance, which they sent to me. And what they say here is, after the awards, the second place racer advised us that he realized he missed part of the course due to a mistake on a volunteer. While this would normally result in a DQ, since this was a mistake on Spartan's part and self-reported by the racer, we took the course of action that we felt was most appropriate, which was essentially, I believe, an hour and 20 minute penalty.
Right.
Which is, I mean, just a very stiff penalty.
Yeah.
It's not as stiff as missing three burpees at an ultra, but that's okay.
That's so true. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Still 10 minutes shy. Anyway, so it's a huge stiff penalty. What Spartan is saying, and again, I also spoke with them on the phone with a Spartan rep, is that they felt they shared responsibility in this. So they felt they couldn't just wipe it away because, yes, you missed a great portion of the course. Yeah. But they felt that with their shared responsibility and their volunteer telling you to go the wrong way, and that they feel they weren't clear enough in the layout of the course and stuff like that. So they're essentially taking ownership, which I'm going to be perfectly honest, I think is really big on their part, because this is not something normally we would, I don't want to, you know, slag on Spartan at all. I'm actually saying they did a great thing here, but, and let's just say Spartan Canada did a great thing. They were willing to say, we made a mistake too, so we're going to use the race director's discretion, which is within the rules that the race director can kind of overturn some stuff, to use race director's discretion and award this penalty as opposed to a straight out DQ. The fact that they acknowledge that they made a mistake, and I was straight up, when I first heard this and someone messaged me about it, I was like, well, that should have been a fucking DQ. Right away. That's my initial stance, because I know that rule book pretty good. And I knew right away there's mandatory obstacles missed. That's cut and dry. And the reason I know that is because I wouldn't know how to fight it. So, you know, that's important. Now, with them saying that and me telling me that today, it does shed a bit of a different perspective on it. And I want to know, because Beth, you didn't know any of this beforehand, does that change how you would view it?
Yeah, I understand what they're saying. The other part of it is the awards were already done, and Spartan also has this rule where when the awards are done, they're done. So basically, if you want to contest anything, you have to do it before the awards. Yeah. And they're done a fairly significant amount of time after the races. So
actually, they were very late at the awards, so everybody kind of left. They did the awards on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So had they not given you your award yet?
They gave me the second place award after I finished, but right, we didn't do the ceremony or nothing until Sunday morning.
Okay, so they hadn't done the podium yet?
No.
Okay, so I'm mixing it up then.
So they did the podium after we swapped second and third place.
So
I'm not sure. They didn't really give me the breakdown on how the time penalty work. Maybe they gave me 10 minutes per obstacle, plus I know I made up 40 minutes on Austin on the last bit, so that's impossible. So maybe they added that to it and then a little bit more. I don't know how they broke that down, but mm-hmm. I mean, I was this is kind of like a training year for me, really, because I fractured my right ankle Last year, September the 30th, I believe. So I missed the Blue Mountain race. So, I mean, podium or no podium, I was just there just to see what I could do, my first ultra in like 4 or 5 years. So whatever they decided penalty wise, I was okay with. So they decided to drive me to third. I mean, I don't feel the greatest of being on the podium when I missed a fairly large chunk of the course, but I did get a significant penalty. So I guess it was kind of a happy medium, I would say, I suppose.
And you didn't petition for anything in particular either. It's not like you said, this shouldn't be a DQ, I deserve this or anything like that. This is, you just told them and this is what they handed you.
I just said, hey, just let me know what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I can send you the exact message I gave them if you want, but.
No. Yeah. Not necessary.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, the thing that I'm trying to say that I'm coming across is that my first initial thought to this, to after getting all the information, really changed my opinion of what happened. And from the beginning, my opinion of what you did was always the same anyway. I just figured you fucked up and went the wrong way. But like I said, my initial thought is that's a DQ right away. But then when I break it down and then I hear a volunteer told you to go the wrong way. Well, I'm always an advocate of when a volunteer is at an obstacle or something like that, and they tell you, hey, this is how it's done. Well, when you're racing, that's the rule. And you don't know, because sometimes they give you a start line speech and then shit changes before the time you get to an obstacle. And so that's all you
have race brain and you just don't always remember. Oh, like we're talking the end of an ultra.
Possibly,
happened 9 hours ago.
like I was telling Dave, the race director told me after the race that he did say that you're supposed to do 2 laps of the ultra, but I don't remember that. So he possibly could have said it, and I was just so exhausted that I just like blanked up, maybe. I don't know.
But I mean, we can throw that out as well. Like, yeah, they did say that at the start line. I've had multiple people say that, and that's cool. But at Blue Mountain, they said everybody can put their hand on top of the rope, and not everybody heard that. So that happens sometimes. And like you said, you were how many hours into this race?
I was probably close to 9 hours at that point.
Yeah. So the fact you knew your name is good enough, but
yeah.
So what I'm saying is once I got all the details, it very much changes how this story is played out. And I think one of the reasons I talked to you earlier is because I wanted to make sure that your side gets told as well. And it's not just, hey, dude missed 4K the course and still didn't get DQ'd. Something's up, right? So this way it just puts out there that exactly what happened and exactly both sides of it. And like I said, Spartan taking their share of the responsibility, which again, I think is really big of them because they could have just threw you under the bus.
Hey, what? I don't get paid for to compete or nothing. So, I mean, I'm not going in there for big prize money. So whatever they wanted to do, I was cool with. I had a lot of fun. The course was probably one of my favorites.
Most of it.
yeah. A lot of people thought it was the hardest since Killington 2014, and I was there and I happen to agree. I think Killington was a lot harder because that was my first beast course and didn't have any training or nothing, just went in and actually wore Walmart running shoes at that race. So I've come a long way, but definitely one of the hardest for sure.
Well, that's not the course being harder, that's just you not being any good.
That's it.
That's like me at OCRWC 15K. It wasn't that the course was hard, it was that I was shit.
That's true.
Right, Beth? True.
I was there.
But even Ryan Atkins agreed with me that 2004, it was the hardest one since 2014. So
I heard a lot of people say it was harder than Owl's Head anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, Owl's Head's right up there too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. And did you get to hold Al I have no idea what this
No, is. Only the first place guys get to hold. I guess I could have asked, but it was always the first place. Even cool the sprints out. And the,
like owls.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Very good, man. Well, like I said, thank you so much for jumping on. And we wanted you to get a chance to tell your side of the story and to make sure that it was clear, that everybody, you know, can understand what happened exactly, and that, you know, these things happen and everybody made a bit of a mistake, and Spartan deemed that this was the way they thought it should go. And I'll be honest, I was against it at first, but I'm kind of okay with it now.
Yeah, I think if fourth place was pretty close to third, I probably would have dropped to fourth, and I would have been cool with that too. Mm-hmm. But because fourth was pretty far out, I would say.
I think it was still like another hour back still, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, yeah, I'll learn from it, ask more questions, be more alert of what the race director says, and hopefully they learn from it too. And I would suggest maybe putting that little detail on that intersection. Okay, first and second lap go the other way, especially since the history tells us that ultras only do one lap of the ultra. And for, I guess, new people, they wouldn't go the wrong way, maybe. But for the veterans out there that have done the ultras quite a bit, they probably would appreciate a little bit more details.
Yeah, it definitely. And also, this is just another sign of, you know, and we don't like throwing a volunteer under the bus, because the volunteer just what they thought was right. They made an honest mistake. These things happen. But also that we still need more volunteers, because I do know that race, they were short and they need more volunteers. So again, when you get to races, step up, volunteer, even if it's for a little while, even if it's not for a free race, even if like you can spare an hour, just say, I got an hour, I can do what I can. So it makes all the difference.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, Tyler, thank you very much, buddy. We really appreciate it. And
hey, no problem at all.
Can't wait to see you racing around again.
Great. Good to see you. I'll catch you on the course.
All right. So thank you very much, Tyler, for jumping on. Really appreciate it. And like I said, that wasn't our plan for this episode, but it was something that has happened, and I got some messages about it, and I thought it was really important to clear it all up. And like I said, I mean, when I first heard about it, my thought was, well, you DQ him. That's it. You just DQ him. Mm-hmm. After hearing it all, does that change it for you too?
It does a little bit. I understand Spartan taking fault in this situation too. So maybe softening the blow a little bit. Ultimately, I just think Spartan just needs to getting more consistency with things like this. I don't mind doing time penalties for everything. Like, it seems like that's what Hyrox does. So maybe they move more in that direction of a fair time penalty instead of just always disqualification. So I don't know, but then you don't want people doing things on purpose and taking time penalties. So I also understand DQs. So I think it's just, and again, it's still a developing sport too, and there's lots of things that go on in these races, but I think they just really need to create a little bit more consistency with these penalties.
And here's the thing, after hearing the whole story, I'm okay with what they did. Mm-hmm. But I also would have been okay with the DQ.
Yeah, me too.
And in saying that, wow, did we just tell Spartan no matter what they did, it was going to be okay? That doesn't sound right at all. I don't like how that sits.
It was a tough call. I understand why they made that call.
It was a tough call, but had that volunteer thing not been there, had he not been told to go the wrong way, then that's a DQ.
Yes. There's also the point where, like, volunteers are volunteers, and it's up to the athlete to know what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's what I mean. This is, they made the decision that they felt this was fair.
Yeah.
And I think it's just it's on that line where you can debate it and argue it either way.
Yeah.
But there is a spot in the rule book where the race director can make these decisions and not automatically warrant a DQ. So This is within the rule book. It is within the guidelines. It's just a little bit of a different situation, and hopefully it doesn't happen again. You know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so before we go on to our other interview with Amy, not Amy Panchik, but Amy Pajic. who is an incredible obstacle racer and just won the female race at Indy Mud Run. It was one other thing I wanted to ask you about was the OCR pentathlon trial thing. And now you said, I don't know about you, but when they first brought it out, what did you expect as far as they would put it forth as an OCR? Like, what did you think you would see?
I was kind of visualizing like a 400 meter course.
Yeah.
With like 10 obstacles.
I kind of was on that realm too. And I liked that. But there was also a part of me that was scared to death. It was just going to be trash.
Yes. You know,
like, just like...
Like, oh, playground obstacles.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know exactly why that scared, why I thought it would go that way or why that fear was in my head, but it was. And now seeing some videos that Obstacle Racing Media has put out and seeing essentially what this looks like is a 100-meter course with, you know, it looks like a beater, a wall, some decent obstacles. Not anything that's going to, you know, not a band cutter, as we'd like to call it, but legit obstacles that, you know, is going to make for a very fast, very competitive 100-meter course. But at the same time, it's not field day at school for kids.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, mm-hmm. You said you saw it with the orange tubes.
Yeah, where it's the vertical grip, where you can, you squeeze it with your legs and you go across it that way.
Yeah, I don't know if that one's actually going to be in the final. I actually hope that one's not.
Yeah.
It kind of, to me, that would take away from the pace and the flow of that course. I think they want a fast pace of this. And I don't even know how their setup's going to be. But from my guess is I think it's going to be like a head-to-head, you know, one person gets eliminated kind of thing.
You know? Yeah.
So I was just relieved to see that. And I wondered if you felt the same way or not.
Yes. Yeah. You have to showcase the sport a little bit.
So hopefully that gets streamed and we get to see that and get to see what it's like, the testing of it. So anyway, I just wanted to see. So without further ado, Indian Mud Runner, first place winner, Amy Padgick, not Panchik. So today was crazy. So I'm sorry that I was late. They made me work 12 okay. hours. So. Oh, 12-hour shifts are too long, and I don't like them. I'm far too lazy for that sort of stuff.
I just got off of 22, so.
I didn't ask, but you must be in like the medical
profession. Yeah, I do veterinary work, so I'm a vet.
Mm-hmm. So you are a vet or a vet tech?
Yeah. A doctor. Yeah, vet.
Like large animal, a small animal.
Small animal emergency.
Oh wow.
So it's fun. It's exciting. Whatever walks in the door, we get to see. So it's, you never know what you're going to get.
That's going to be hard though. Like really, cause I assume anybody who becomes a vet is like an animal lover.
Right.
And the animals in the worst state and spend half the time in, I hate like putting dogs down and stuff like that. Like that's gotta be really tough.
It's definitely not the highlight, but once you see enough of them that are just suffering, you know, it's the kinder option for them. So it's easier if you think about it that way.
Yeah, that's sad and depressing. I don't want to think about that. Yeah. We're off to a great start. Let's talk.
This is a really happy start.
All right. So before we get to Indian Mud Run and everything that happened this weekend, by the way, Bethany apologized. She can't be here today. She is on holidays. She's gone down to Colorado to run with her Olympian friend. So I'm like,
That's exciting.
Yeah. See, she didn't invite us at all. Never. Not once. Yeah. Never even considered it. I swear. So I'll be honest. Like, I know your name and I know your obstacle prowess, shall we say, but I don't know a ton about where you come from. But what it occurs to me is we see so many girls and women in the sport that come from that whole running track background. I have a feeling that you are not that same kind of lineage.
I guess sort of close. So when I was in fifth grade, my dad started coaching cross country for our local like CYO team. So yep. I started cross country and then track when I got to middle school. It was funny. So I was a sprinter and a jumper in track. So I had more like the speed there. But then in college, I did track for a couple years, but I got stress fractures, kind of got tired of it. So I quit, started rock climbing and started endurance running. So then when you add the running and the rock climbing together, that's OCR basically. So
pretty much, really. You get stress fractures and call stress fractures in college, and yeah, right away I'm going to tell you Bethany's going to be disappointed this year. She's not here because, I mean, she's dealt with like a lot of people going through college where they're just forcing the training, forcing the lose weight, the mm-hmm. whole atmosphere. Is that the same kind of experience you had? Like, did you go through that kind of deal?
Some of it. A lot of it was just, so I did the pentathlon. I was kind of the jack of all trades, master of none. So it was a lot of impact every day. And they had the college I went to, they had a very fast track, but it was not very forgiving. So just jumping, running hard every day, just took a toll. And it just wasn't as fun anymore too. One, if it hurts, it's not going to be fun, but like high school, I really enjoyed it, but college track just kind of took the joy out of it. So leaving was, I didn't realize at the time, one of the best things I did.
So pentathlon, that's not like the modern pentathlon thing right now that's going through with the OCR, Olympics, World Obstacle, all that stuff. It's a different type of pentathlon.
Yeah, so it was hurdles, high jump, long jump, shot put, and the 800.
All right. So what it means is you do not have the fencing skills required to jump into modern pentathlon so that you can become our first kind of obstacle sport Olympian. If it even happens, I don't know. But
right.
Have you been following any of that? Have you kept track?
Only a little bit. I catch pieces, but I haven't really been following.
Did you see the test course they put out or a bit of it?
Oh, no.
It was like 100-meter kind of, let's call it low-level ninja course.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, it's not overly difficult, but nowhere I think it would be. Finishes with, I couldn't tell the size of warp wall, but I'm going to say maybe 13 foot or something along that line.
Okay. So,
stuff that a lot of people like yourself would probably be very good at, but then you have to fence and swim and shoot laser guns, which I still don't understand that much.
And I could learn maybe.
I think there's like a lot of stuff that I think the OCR people could learn pretty quickly. Like, I mean, obviously the laser gun thing is apparently almost like a biathlon where you run and then you have to shoot guns.
Okay.
Real guns, and now they use laser guns. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Evolution. But there is swimming in it too. And I mean, that.
I can get from point A to point B. I'm not particularly fast, but.
You can get through the Indian mud run swim.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a completely different thing where it's, who knows what's going on with that. But one of the reasons that I've been a fan of yours is you are an obstacle person, and I'm like a grip enthusiast, yeah, obstacle guy. I compete in ninja as well. Mm-hmm. And not super great, but you know, I mean, I do what I can. But I've seen you do, I think the first thing when I really, I don't want to say it's the first time I saw you or noticed you, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking back to the Savage race where mm-hmm. Lindsay came to run.
Yes.
And I mean, and so the basics as I remember it is there was probably about five girls stuck at that rig. And you just came by and went, la, 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 la. See ya.
Yeah. Like,
that's the way it's done. And that's how it was. So how was that race for you? Let's just go back and tell me a little bit about that one.
It was a very proud moment for me. It was like my home course, Savage. Like we go, it's, you know, the same location every year. We always go there, usually get on the podium, and then I arrive and then there's Lindsay Webster and Tiffany, like a whole bunch of top girls. It's like, well, shoot, you know. I can't run them on the mountains. I'm not a bad runner, but I'm never going to be that fast on the running. We go, and I think I was in like fourth or fifth most of the race. And then I'd kind of given up hope on catching up to get the podium. And we had already gotten through like Twirly Bird and the Anchors Away and a lot of the other obstacles that I thought maybe they would slow them down, but no. But then when I got to the rig and I saw all of them there, I was like, they can't all be stuck here. Like maybe they must be coming back to cheer people on or something. So like even at then, I didn't really know like exactly what was going on until once I got like maybe half, three quarters of the way through and everyone was like really cheering and I kind of picked up on it. It's like, wow, this is really cool. This is what it's all about, right? So it was very surprised and a very proud moment for me.
I think the only thing that would have been better if you just turned around and went like, see ya. A little more taunting, you know.
I wasn't confident enough in that I was actually in first to do that.
the other thing about that one, if I remember right too, was right after it was the chain.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of girls were really struggling with that chain, right? That, like,
yeah, I didn't realize that's what it was gonna be.
And especially right after such a grip gauntlet, right? Then you're gonna get on it and try to haul that chain. I thought it was really well designed that way.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Like, I even like back to the Battle Frog days. I remember there's one in Vegas where they had like the jerry can carry right into a rig and then another rig. So it was like a lot of back to back where like the grip recovery and endurance actually matters, and that it helps me. Obviously, I'm biased, but. But it takes, yeah. I think it takes it, where it's not something particularly difficult per se, but when you just stack it up like that, it's just something else to make it less of just a running race. And I enjoy that.
Well, yeah. And like I say, when you design the course right, all of a sudden you can make that. And I think after that one too, was that little slant wall with the rock climbing holds too. And people were struggling with that one too. So if you slam everybody's grip and then throw this stuff right after, all of a sudden that becomes crazy to call. And that actually found that, and you said this with Indian Mud Run, was there was no one obstacle that you looked at and went, well, I can't do that, or that's, but the accumulation.
Exactly. I think that way it's a, and there's a lot of races where, you know, there's like one really hard obstacle, and if you can't do it, like, sorry, you know, it's a bummer. But like, yeah, like you said, there's no one really hard obstacle that you can't really do. It's just the succession of them. You have to get your grip back, have to get the endurance back. So even if you can make it through, but if you have to take 15 minutes between each obstacle to get your grip back, that's at least, you know, it's making a difference than other just being running and jumping over walls and whatnot.
Yeah. And I've seen now a lot of people go on about Savage and how tough their obstacles are. And I'm kind of with you. I don't really find Savage's obstacles that tough. And God forbid for the rest of you, I'm sorry if Lee hears me, but it's just comes down to that rig, right? It always comes down to what kind of mood they're in when they build that rig and what they're thinking, you know, what they were drinking the night before. So, but that's where I kind of, I sometimes take back a little, some of the credit that I give them is because it's all come down to that one and done. Whereas I like to see, you know, a little higher level throughout.
Right.
You know,
and I still feel like Savage does better than a lot of other races. Like when they have like Twirly Bird anchors, so at least they're like cool, they're different, they're unique.
Yeah. And but I do like them.
But I agree. Like when it just comes down to one obstacle, like the rig is not as exciting as just like Indian, where they had, you know, a lot of like, you know, here's a cool rig to a cargo net, and then another one in the low rig, and then the tilting ladders, right? Back to back to back. That was, it was fun. It was exciting.
So one more thing about Savage is I didn't see you as much participating in the big series.
Yeah, part of it, it started in beginning of March, I think.
Yeah.
And I was in the off season rock climbing. I just wasn't really ready to get back into it yet. But then also as it started and we're seeing the obstacles weren't as difficult, like the rigs weren't as difficult. I feel like I get the principle behind it to try and attract more people to do it. And you need to get enough finishers. But then you also have, theoretically, you're attracting the strongest of the competitors there who are more capable of doing that. And then you baby the obstacles down. And it's like, it didn't entice me to travel for it.
And I'm with you there. And I've kind of gone through this discussion with some other people about similar things. But, and as I'm looking, there's a Savage axe in the back there. But I've got mine somewhere else. Yeah. But, I think they find if they just keep designing the courses to be at a certain level, your stars are going to be different people, but they are going to show up. They might not be who you expect them to be. So maybe on the courses, if Savage continue to make the harder rigs, maybe Lindsay's not the star, right? Maybe someone like yourself is, who maybe isn't quite as fleet as foot, but can string all those obstacles together and can continue on. And I think sometimes some of the designers are maybe, and this is just me shooting shit, or maybe just trying to create their courses to fit the current narrative as to what an OCR athlete should be. Whereas in my mind, I think an OCR athlete should be more obstacles, and then the running is just getting you from one to the next.
I agree. I'm biased, but also you think back to like the first world championship race when all of a sudden there's a rig and most people haven't seen a rig before, but then the next year, everybody learned how to do rigs, everybody practiced, and everybody evolved. And I feel like that's something that we're kind of losing because we're just not changing the obstacles as much. When, you know, like Spartans, all the Spartan obstacles are going to be the same, not that challenging. And even Savage, the rig's going to be challenging, but it's, you know, we all know Twirly World VR. We all know the anchors away, whatnot, the wheel world, whatnot. So that's the, I feel like we're kind of missing some of the evolution when we don't change that.
Well, yeah. And it's like you say, I mean, you, if you see these obstacles, you train from, I mean, I have a garage full of simulation stuff that I've seen on course. So I build what I can. Train for that, to get ready for that. And that's how it should work. It should be me or you or whoever trained for the course, not make the course for the people that you think should
be. Uh-huh. When I saw a bunch of videos of the European Championship and the obstacles look phenomenal. It looks so much fun. And then it's like, our obstacles here, like there's some races that do a much better job than others, obviously, but it's like, well, the fact that we just don't have that here is a little soul crushing.
Like, did you see some of my favorite people to watch are, like, I love watching Ulrike stuff. Mm-hmm. Obviously Leon and Nikolai and Anita, Thomas mm-hmm. von Tonder, mm-hmm. all like the uh-huh. best stuff over there. And just when I saw the 400 meter course.
Yes.
That would be amazing. That would be so much fun.
Uh-huh. Maybe we'll spend a year if I don't.
I know. I want to go to Poland because Poland seems to be badass for their obstacles. It's always been a bucket. I have no other reason to go to Poland. I don't even know if there's anything else in Poland, but I know that their obstacle people are killed.
Find a reason to go, right?
What's that?
I could find a reason to go.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's just, I see that stuff and I think why? And even on some of our posts, I would be like, I will share stuff from there and just say, you know, North American series, look at this stuff.
I know. Don't
always need to run 18 miles through muddy mountains and ridiculousness to get to a wall. Like, it would be nice to have some rings. So
yeah,
maybe one day
we can dream, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or we can travel, one or the other, and you know what,
or both.
Yeah, sometimes it's both. So Indian Mudra is coming up, and obviously was coming up, and this was obviously a big race, this was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And last one, not last Indian Mud Run, maybe not last race. I mean, from the way they spoke after, I don't know what you know, but from the way they were speaking, it seemed very.
Yeah, I think you know 50. What I know. Yeah, they're. Yeah. I know they've been having issues with the park, so it sounds like really it comes down to if the new crew can make a deal with the park, and get everything running smoothly. Hopefully, it'll be a go.
It was because it's a great venue. It's a great place, and mm-hmm. So, you know, why don't you just tell us a bit about how your race went?
So I love this course. It's kind of one of our home courses, so it's kind of extra special to me. But I was really proud of my performance all over. I'm definitely not as fast a runner as like Christy there, but even in like the first stretch there, you know, we have the hurdles, the little walls, the little easier obstacles to start spreading everybody out. She would outrun me, but then we hit an obstacle, and even like over a wall, I was smooth, fast, efficient. I'd catch her, pass her on the obstacle, and then she'd pass me back on the run, and I'd pass her on the next obstacle. But my, just even like the speed and efficiency over like the simple little obstacles, I think was really good. But I held my own on the running. We got to the technical portion, and that's really where I pulled away on like the downhill technical, the rocky terrain and whatnot. And then we had put that big cargo net, and then back up into the, back up the woods to that the rings. And then by then I had taken the lead, and that was the earliest I've ever taken the lead on that race. So I was like, well, shoot, that might have gone out too fast this time. But so it was kind of like for the first like couple miles, still really nervous that I was gonna get caught on the run and get past. So obviously Rachel, she was really good at obstacles too. A lot of the Battle of the Lions pro team was there, so they're pretty obstacle proficient too. So I knew the obstacles wouldn't be hard enough to stop them, but if I could be fast enough and efficient enough and recover enough, I felt like I had a pretty good chance. And that was basically it. They had obstacle back to back to back to back. And I've been doing a lot of rock climbing, so the grip endurance is there, the recovery is there, and everything just went really smooth. And then even by the end, I wasn't as taxed and tired as it was in years previous. So I feel like my training's really starting to pay off there.
And you told me there that at the race that you sent it a little early this time compared to normal. Like you didn't hang back. You went for it right away.
Yeah. And that made me nervous, but it worked out in the end.
But I think it's strange because a lot of times you hear people talk about running races, track, marathon, and everything, and they say, you know, uh-huh. Hey, don't go out too hard, don't do this. I find personally in OCR, oftentimes it does. It's that seems to be that one sport where it helps sometimes to get out fast and go hard.
You know, maybe get bottlenecked or caught on obstacles.
And it's you seem to be able to, you know, to crush people when, uh-huh. when you know they. Especially if I would be thinking if I'm Chrissy and she's like you say she's a faster runner, but if I'm chasing you, and I see you get to the ninja rings before me, uh-huh. well then I know that this is just going to get worse.
Uh huh.
So I think in a way that's great because I don't know how hard you're suffering. I don't know if you're. Uh-huh. So I kind of think it's an okay. It's not a bad strategy. I know generally when I race, I do shorter races, so I go out as hard as I can until I die. But it has worked for me in the past where, like you say, to avoid bottlenecks, to avoid, you know, and it doesn't uh-huh. have to be a big bottleneck. It can just be one guy in uh-huh. the way taking you an extra 3 seconds.
Exactly.
Pull away.
Uh-huh.
I was finding, and I think, and you can tell me how you feel about this, I find one of the most underrated obstacles to make time on is the A-frames.
Yes. Yes.
I found make massive time on A-frames.
Yeah, so the A-frames here were big enough. We'd do like 2-3 flips down it and just get off it real quick. So it was easy. Yeah. Or easy to make up time there.
So throughout the rest of the course, and then you finished in very good. Did anything at all give you any problems? Did you have to retry anything?
One of the floating walls, you had to go like up and then over the other side. The top rock hold that I was using spun on me, so it dumped me off and I had to redo that. But that was not bad.
Yeah, you didn't end up in that slime, did you?
No, that was the one on land, not over the canal. Thank God.
I have a friend ended up in that. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah. I'm sure it smelled great.
Oh, yeah. we sent her to the shower real quick. But so you got through that. You had the race. You took the win. Mm-hmm. Is this your first time running this one? Or
no, I think it's the, fourth, fifth? Actually, there's...
Jeez. Where's the big one?
There's my... all my hatchets and spears and what's that, 2-4?
Very appropriate decoration. Looks good there.
Yeah.
Where's the big, what'd you do with the giant arrow? There it
is.
Not bad.
Yeah.
That doesn't even stick out too poorly. Like, that's not too bad. I thought you would struggle with that. I actually was feeling bad for anyone who might have flown.
I know. Yeah, that'd be hard to get home. A heavy checked bag or something, but yeah.
So were there anyone's obstacles there that caught you as maybe more difficult than you thought? Like, because I'll say Tilted Kilt was one that I saw in the videos before and I'm like, that nothing. But then when I got to it, I was like, wow, that was actually more difficult than I expected.
Not really. I feel like everything was, I guess the low rig, I struggled reaching for the T-bar a little bit, but I was able to knock it, swing it, and then once it was swinging close to me, grab it. But I never really felt like I struggled on the obstacles too much. Like I said, they weren't any like particularly difficult obstacles on their own, but it's just a section of them. And I guess too, like with the Tilted Kilt being right after those, two rigs and then the low rig, yeah. And that's not far after Gibbons either, so that's a lot of upper body. To end on the Tilted Kilt, we have a big incline to go up. That probably made it a lot harder.
The low rig, I didn't bother with the T-bar. I said, forget that, and went from the nunchuck to the last pole.
Nice.
The T-bar was such a low hang, whereas the nunchuck you could grab high. Mm-hmm. And then what I was planning to do, but I screwed it up. I told my friend to do it, but spin the nunchuck before you completely grab it, then it'll take you around and you can go on to the other side. But uh-huh. I, of course, forgot to do that when I got there. And then grabbed high and I'm like, whoop, I'm just hanging here. So I had to like kick the back bar and then spin around and go uh-huh. out. But yeah, I found that T-bar was, that was a taunt. It was something I didn't need to use. It was take up too much time. So you say you are part of the Battle of the Lions team, right?
Yes.
And I was on Matt's podcast and we talked earlier and it was, got a little information, so Sid's going to straighten me out. He's going to come on, talk to me, and straighten me out. But their season's a little bit different this year.
Yeah.
So go ahead. What are the races set up this year for them?
So they're not doing the standardized combined course like they did last year, but they're still having the grip one. They just had the strength one in Kansas City, and they have like the endurance one in Oklahoma. Or no, that's Kansas. Where is it? Oklahoma City.
Okay. And how'd that first one go for you?
Actually didn't make it because I had to work. I know. Still have to work every other weekend. Kind of bites.
Trust me, I've had mind issues with work this year. I've missed so much that I was supposed to go to. And it keep making me do these stupid shits. Tips to children. Don't get real jobs. Just live off your parents. Except mine.
Right? Right. You're so much better. No.
All right. So you, like you said, you're not sure if you don't know about what's going on for next year. Obviously I would figure this will be part of your plans for next year, but what's on the docket for the rest of this year? Because usually Indian Mud Run is very much, a lot of people say it's the best preparation for OCRWC. So is that we're heading? And if so, is it the 15K, the 3K? What's the
goal? We're going, we're doing all of it. If I'm going to Vermont, got to make it worth it, right? So do the 100 meters, the 3K, the 15K, the team relay, and then I have some family coming, so we'll do the was it the Stratton Foundation run or the charity run?
The relay I always find is one of the most exciting ones for me. I really enjoy that. Do you guys have a Battle of the Lions team for that one, or are you branching out somewhere else?
I don't know who my team is yet. Last year I was with Matt Willis and Jeff Shady, so I think we're going to team up again. We haven't got that solid yet, so we'll see.
And of course it depends who gets injured and who does it, because it always seems everybody's team is different than what it was going into it by the time the team run. I know one time I've done the actual leg of the race I was supposed to. Before, well, we actually got there, I ended up doing the one that was planned. The rest of the time, it seems to get jumped around a lot. But
at least being on the co-ed team, it makes sense for me to be the obstacle technician. So luckily, I usually get what I want. But we're like one of the first years where we actually broke it down. I was with Michelle Warnke and Maggie Thorne, so I was the runner on our team because we were both ninjas. I was like, well, I guess I'm the runner this time.
That always hurts, eh? I once did a call. I used to have Allison Ty train me. She was my coach. Uh-huh. She's a fantastic coach. And she asked me, she had a group of people preparing for World's Toughest Mudder, and she wanted me to come and talk to them about some obstacle techniques and whatnot. Uh-huh. And then she tells me one of the women is Jamie Ron's wife, and I'm like, well, or girlfriend. I'm like, well, what am I doing? Made no sense. Anyway, it actually did go well, but still you feel a little, you know,
yeah,
a little insecure on that one,
right? Oh, that's funny.
So World is that the end of the year? Is that the big plan, and that's the A race?
They have the Dallas by the Lions is later on in October, so I'll probably do that one. Then that'll probably be it for the year. But then just on for fun, we're looking at doing rim to rim to rim on the Grand Canyon, so might get some endurance after the obstacle racing season is over.
For fun? That doesn't sound fun at all.
I think it sounds like a lot of fun.
Questioning your logic. I've heard about that one though. That does sound like epic. So that's essentially, isn't that pretty much down the Grand Canyon, back up the other side, back down and back up?
Yeah. And so we're looking at doing it over the winter, where it's cooler at the bottom, but then you have to start and finish with headlamps. So we're trying to do it in a day.
That's a nasty one. Like I've heard some, I don't want to call it horror stories, but you know, it's not your run in the park.
I guess technically it is. It's the national park, right? Yeah.
I've been down in the Grand Canyon once. It was absolutely amazing, but I can assure you I did not run down there. I actually went the day after World's Toughest Mudder, so I could barely walk, but
you know, oh geez.
It was still pretty.
Wow. Yeah, it would still be pretty. Wow, that's what timing to try.
Well, I'm not in Vegas a lot, so it's like, okay, I'm here. Helicopter thing down in there, and tried to take pictures that never looked at all as, they don't do it justice. Nothing does.
Don't.
But it is definitely one of the things you should do if you ever get there. And if they ever put World's Toughest Mudder back in Vegas, which I still think they should.
It was a good venue.
Yes, it was. Did you do WTM there? When was the last time you did that?
It's been a hot minute since I've done it.
Yeah, it was 2017 when I went.
18? Okay.
That was last year in Vegas. 2017 was last year in Vegas.
Okay. Honestly, I can't remember. I know 13 was the first year I did it. The last year it was in Jersey. And then I think I did it a couple years while it was in Vegas after that.
Is that the
same? It's been a minute since I've done it.
Yeah. I don't feel a need to do it again, but I did it the once and I screwed it up, but I went to Shale Hill after and did better there and got my 24-hour bug out of my head, so I'm all right.
There you go.
Well, we have a race for you, if it ever happens again, that you guys need to come up and try, and that was the Platinum Rig 24.
Oh, yes.
And
the one year I almost did it, I can't remember if it was school or work or whatnot. That was the issue, but
they've only had it the 1 year. So they had it the 1 year and then the COVID and everything happened. So, but if they ever have it again, it is right up your guys' alley. Like, you guys need to send a battle line team for that because it was amazing. And I was, I only bring it up because I was chatting with them today saying, is going on. And hopefully they'll let us know soon.
That would be awesome.
Anyway, that's all I have for you today. I wanted to say thanks very much for coming out. Congratulations on the Indian Mud Run. It was awesome to watch you run. Oh, wait, before I do that, the 3K.
Yes.
So according to the stats, you finished second last.
Oh, no, I was first.
I know you were. I know.
I couldn't find myself in the stats.
No, if you look at the standings, yeah, I don't know if I looked today to see if they're fixed in, and I don't think they are yet. I have no idea what happened on that, but
I just figured it didn't read my chip or something because I couldn't find myself.
No, it had you. Yeah, it had you second last. I was like, well, that's not right. I ended up. I have no idea what went on with that race, but that was like my only downside about that was because that was the only race I ran that day. I did volunteering earlier and I raced, and I was, it's like, wow, that that went a little bit south, but which is too bad, but. Maybe next time they'll have
it. Yeah, I think it was a little rushed, or I guess hastily thrown together at the end there, I think.
Yeah, but you know, I didn't mind the course. The course was cool. It was fast. It was, you know, there were some obstacles. Just yeah. But you know what? I said it before. You know what? Who cares? It was a good time. It was the last Indian Mud Run, and let them have it. We'll give them a bypass on that one. But anyway, Amy, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It was very much a pleasure meeting you, and was definitely
Likewise. Something
I'd hoped to do in for a long time. Big fans, and keep crushing the obstacles. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. Actually, I guess we'll see you in Vermont.
See you in Vermont.